Okay, guys, here we go. Our
Here you go.
topic for tonight is the Kohen and the Convert. The Kohen and the Convert.
I read the
So,
novel. Just kidding.
right.
Go ahead.
Why was it already discussed by somebody else this week?
Nope.
No. It just sounded like a great name for a novel, The Kohen and the Convert. I like it. All right.
It's real life stories though. So the
Okay.
pasuk in this week's reading says, "Isha zonah v'chalala lo yikachu, v'isha grusha me'isha lo yikachu." That the kohen is forbidden to marry certain categories of women: zonah, chalala, and grusha. So grusha, a divorcee, we can leave aside for now. Chalala is a woman who has tainted status vis-a-vis the priesthood. We can leave that aside for now. But what is zonah? So Chazal are going to have to define that precisely, and it may be that there are multiple definitions or multiple varieties of ways that a woman could fall into the classification of zonah, but we're going to have to figure it out. So the Mishnah in Yevamos says, "Chachamim omrim, ein zonah ela giyoret u'meshuchrat v'shenivah bilatznut." That the who is the zonah? Someone who either was a convert, a freed Canaanite slave girl, or a woman who had forbidden relations. Well, forget forbidden relations for now, and forget even the freed slave girl. Let's just focus on the convert. So a giyoret is a zonah. Why? Why? Any suggestions?
That makes no sense to me. She
Okay.
becomes she becomes Jewish and you're calling her a zonah.
Exactly. All right, so your instinctive reaction is what's going to animate certain late 20th century attempts to circumvent the halakha in a favorable direction. Okay.
Didn't mean to go
So,
that far, but
all right, well, we'll see how far some people are willing to go. Now, the Mishnah in Kiddushin says the following: Rabbi Eliezer ben Yaakov Omer, Yisrael shenasa giyoret, B'tok she'ra lakuna. If a regular Jew marries a female convert, that a daughter produced from that union is kosher to marry a kohen. And similarly, a male convert who marries a Jewish girl, a native Jewish girl, the daughter of that union is kosher to marry a kohen. But if a ger marries a giyoret, the daughter is not kosher to marry a kohen. So all of a sudden, in this Mishnah and Kiddushin, we're now saying that beyond simply a convert, a female convert not being allowed to marry a kohen, that there is a need for some Jewish ancestry in order even for the descendants of converts to marry a kohen. Whereas Rabbi Yossi Omer, Af ger shenasa giyoret b'tok she'ra lekohuna, no, even if a male convert marries a female convert and they have a daughter, that daughter can marry a kohen. So there's a machlokes tanoim about the status of the offspring of converts and mixed convert non-convert unions regarding their child's ability to marry a kohen. Let's go now to the Gemara on that Mishnah. So Kiddushin 78a Ayin Chesem and Aleph, for those keeping score at home, if you have the sheets. So Tanya, Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai Omer, Rabbi Shimon ben Yochai says the following. Oh, it's Lag BaOmer, Shimon ben Yochai. Okay, good. All right. So Gioris Pechus mi ba'ashal Shem Yom Echad. If you have someone who converts to Judaism at the age of less than 3 years and 1 day, so a child, like an infant convert to Judaism, a girl, Kishera Kahuna, she's allowed to marry a kohen. Shenem, or as it says in the Torah, that in the Israelite war against Midian, it says that the little girls you were allowed to keep alive, as opposed to everybody else who was executed. It was essentially a genocidal war against Midian. So Halo Pinchas, and Pinchas was one of the people who fought in this war. And if he's allowed to keep alive for matrimonial purposes girls who were under a certain age, because they had yet to be sexually active, it must mean that a convert in that category is allowed to marry a kohen, because Pinchas is a kohen. But as for the rabbis who disagree with Shimon bar Yochai, they say, it doesn't mean they were going to marry them. It just means they can keep them alive to be slaves, but not in holy matrimony. Okay? The Kulan Mikra Echad Darshu. And all of the various Tanaitic opinions are expounding upon the same verse. It's a pasuk in Yechezkel. Almana ugrusha lo yikhu lahem lanashim. Widows and divorcees, they shall not take for themselves as wives. Kim betulot mizera beit Yisrael. They can take virgins from the house, from the seed of the house of Israel. Now that pasuk in Yechezkel is a problem. What's the problem with it? It goes against the Torah. Okay.
The halacha.
Right, right. The Torah says only an amana is only asked to a kohen gadol. So this is a famous problem of Yechezkel going against the Torah, and there was some discussion of suppressing Yechezkel, putting it in the Geniza, and they had to figure out an interpretation to salvage it. Okay, not for now. The point is, the pasuk says that a kohen has to marry a girl who's from Zera Beit Yisrael. Well, is a convert from Zera Beit Yisrael? Arguably not. Okay, so then Rabbi Yehuda Savar ad is kol zera miYisrael. Rabbi Yehuda holds the maximalist position that it must be that on both sides of the aisle, mother and father, this girl has some Israelite ancestry before she's allowed to marry a kohen. Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov sever mizera filo mikzah zera, whereas Elazar ben Yaakov, who said it's enough if either the mother or the father was a native-born Jew, then mikzah zera, a little bit of her genealogy must be indigenously Jewish. But if the rest of it is not indigenously Jewish, that's okay. Rabbi Yossi sever mishen nizru ubi Yisrael. Rabbi Yossi, who said that a child of two converts can marry a kohen, he says it's enough that the seed was implanted at a time when they were Jewish, meaning they don't have to have Jewish ancestry, but since at the moment of conception, both mother and father of this child were Jews by conversion, but Jews, that's good enough. And Rabbi Shimon Yochai says, Mishnizu b'Selebi Yisrael, as long as her bitulim, her virginity, grows when she's a Jew, that's enough. And when does a girl's virginity grow? In the eyes of the Talmud, at the age of 3. That under that age, any sexual activity she might have had is insignificant. But from 3, already that's practically an adult. So as long as the betulim grow when she's a Jew, that's okay. So these are the various Tanitic positions about the status of a female convert herself. And, yeah? Question? Okay. No.
Irvin, you're muted.
Oh. Okay.
He's talking.
Somebody's talking? No? Okay.
Yeah, Irving is talking, but he has...
Can you possibly say a three-year-old, she's a grown person. She's a baby. She can't go anything. Don't you have any type of... You know,
how does a three-year-old convert?
Okay, so the story of Gimel Shanim V'Yomechad is that in halachic literature... There are cutoff points for both males and females regarding which their sexual activity below that age is disregarded and beyond that age is recognized as being significant.
Interesting.
Okay, so for a girl, it's at the age of 3, and for a boy, it's at the age of 9. Now, so then the Gemara says...
I beg to differ with you. A 3-year-old is not going to be able to get a baby or anything else because she doesn't have it all the stuff there.
No, we're not assuming that she could become pregnant. That's not the issue here. The issue is medical assumptions about her virginity that are by modern standards completely bogus, but the Talmud assumed it was correct. Okay, so the Gemara then says in Yevamos and Daf Samach, but there was a Kohen who married a certain Gioris, and she had converted at the age of less than 3. And so the question was, who allowed such a thing? Well, one of the Amoraim said, we paskin like Reb Shimon Bar Yochai. So the Gemara says, no, you're wrong. We'll pull you out by your ear. In other words, we reject this notion of a young female convert being subsequently able to marry a Kohen. What about the halacha for the child of converts? Can the child, the female child, marry a Kohen? So the Gemara in Kiddushin says, Halacha ki Rabbi Yossi. We paskin like Rabbi Yossi that as long as she was born to 2 Jews, even if those Jews were converts, she could marry a Kohen. However, Morin Elazar ben Yaakov. We publicly give instruction along the lines of Elazar ben Yaakov that we would much rather have this girl marry a Kohen if and only if at least one of her parents was indigenously Jewish. So it's an example of halacha v'emorin kein, where the law is one thing, but the public instruction is otherwise. Okay, these are all the various... yeah, Arthur.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, what about in a case of war where we have a captive Gentile woman, where we're allowed to have intercourse with her?
Yeah.
Is a Kohen allowed?
So a Kohen, that's a good question. It seems that a Kohen is allowed to have Eishes Yifas Tohar, but can't marry her. In other words, the Yikach means in a matrimonial sense.
Mm-hmm.
Forbidden. If you paskin like those we've shown them, it say that be a
meaning he gets the best of both allowed, worlds, this guy, right?
Then it would be allowed. But if you say that it's not allowed, then he couldn't take a Eishes Yifas Tohar.
But is he still responsible for no, but this taking, way the guy taking can her to his, he to, to his house? Is he still responsible for taking her to his house, shaving her head, letting her mourn all these things?
The answer is no, because he can't marry her subsequently. But the question is, could he have relations with her initially? Machlokas, whether or not initial intercourse is even permitted. In any case, forget Cohen. Okay, so... now let's go to the various Rishonim who try to explain why it is that the Giyoris is being branded as a Zona. Granted, the Gemara did so, or at least one sugya in the Gemara did, and another sugya seemed to go in the direction of Bezera Beit Yisrael, but why did the Gemara, at least in one instance, refer to a Giyoris as a Zona? Rashi says, Debias Akum V'Evet Pisala, that her relations that she had prior to her conversion with heathen men and with the slave population has rendered her invalid for Kohanic marriage. So basically, we assume she was sexually active when she was a shiksa, and that's why a Kohen can't marry her. Now, that's an assumption. We don't know that to be true. What if it isn't true? Does that change anything? What if we could prove that it wasn't true in that particular case?
No, it's a general principle. Yeah.
It's not clear that
regular Kohen, but a regular Kohen doesn't have to marry only a virgin girl. So why would that be an issue? I mean, a regular today
because the Gemara is claiming that the pasuk in Yechezkel is applied to a regular Kohen Hedyot, not just to a Kohen Gadol. And so therefore, Zera Beit Yisrael is relevant, and Zona is being defined as any illicit relations, and that's in the Torah. So if it is assumed about every Gentile woman who converts to Judaism that she previously had illicit relations, then presto, you have a whole category of Zona. Now, Rashi elsewhere says, Asur b'giyores m'shichores m'shim zona shenivala mikodim. He presumes that she previously had relations. And by the way, not even necessarily illicit relations. It's just that she's not a virgin girl, and the fact that she had relations with a Gentile or with a slave automatically negates her as a candidate for Kohanic marriage. Let's now go to Tosfos. The Tosfos says, Ein zona l'giyores shenivala bilasnus. Because they go upon her in her status as a Nochriya. So Tosfos, following the heels of Rashi, takes for granted that this is not a virgin girl. She had relations. But then go to the next Tosfos. Tosfos in Yevamah 61a. And says like this. V'tam alafi sheba min ha'ovdei kohanim ha'shetufim. She comes to us from among the heathens, the idolaters, who are shtufim bezima. How would you translate shtufim bezima? Steeped in licentiousness. That's a great expression. Steeped in licentiousness. All right. Sounds even better in English than it does in Hebrew. Then let's go to the last line of that Tosfos. Veheicha delo zinta, and where she didn't have relations previously, hutzruchu ligzer al gioris deshach bakicha vechilul asur mishim zona afagav delo zinta. So Tosfos is acknowledging something here, that if she didn't previously have relations, this is not a din d'oraisa, it's only a din d'rabbanan, meaning under Torah law, she's not a zona. How do you like that? So if we thought this was a categorical thing, maybe yes, but maybe only mid'rabbanan. That mid'oraisa, if we knew the facts, she actually could be muteris to the Kohen. Okay, now let's go to the Rush. So the Rush says, Afal Pishla Nivla Kriya Zona, even if she didn't previously have relations at all, she's called a Zona. Lafisha Mitzvim Shtufe Zimahem, Uvaneyem Yalde Znunim. That the Egyptians, meaning all the Goyim, are steeped in licentiousness, and their children are Yalde Znunim, meaning there's no paternity among the heathens. That nobody knows who their father is, everybody is having relations with everybody, they're all mamzerim. There's no mamzerim in the halachic sense, but they're all mamzerim in the metaphorical sense, in the colloquial sense. And that's why a gioris can't marry a kohen, because her pedigree is bad, because everybody out there's pedigree is bad.
That's also the rabbanan, right? This is assumptions the rabbanan. It still implies midaraita, it would be permitted.
I guess so, yeah. Now let's go to the Rambam. The Rambam takes a different approach. The Rambam says, even if she was converted before the age of three, behold, she's a zona and forbidden to a Kohen. Now, the Rambam doesn't imply that it is only Rabbanan because midoraisa we would have to find out whether she had a sexual activity before she converted. He says just simply, straight, without any nuance, that she's a zona. Is it midoraisa? Maybe you could argue that it is. But then the Ravid says the following. The Ravid says, Eina mishum zona. The gioris is not forbidden to the Kohen because of zona. Ela mishum dechsibusulos zarabais Yisrael, but rather because of the pasuk in Yecheskel, that she's not of Jewish ancestry. Okay, let's go to the Magid Mishnah. So the Magid Mishnah explains. But
Rabbi?
Yeah, yeah.
Rabbi?
Yeah.
Rabbi, do you define a zona as just someone, as relations with someone that that they're not married to? And that's...
No.
That a zona?
That's never the...
Is that considered an illicit relationship?
So the definition of zona is never... relations with someone you're not married to. It's almost always relations with someone you're forbidden to marry. Even if you're not married, but as long as you were not forbidden to marry, it's not illicit. It's zmus in the colloquial sense, but doesn't make someone a zona. So the Magid Mishnah says, Das Rabbeinu Delav Kabbalaninu, that don't turn to the Pasuk in Yecheskel. The pasuk in Yecheskel is Divrei Kabbalah. If you have a halachic source in the Bible that's post Pentateuchal, it's not in the Chumash, but rather it's in the Neviim Uksuvim, that's known as Divrei Kabbalah. So the Ravid is arguing Divrei Kabbalah, the pasuk in Yecheskel, and the Magid Mishnah is saying no. The Rambam doesn't hold from that. He's not asserting Divrei Kabbalah. Dim Kenavah LeLameimar DeAsi Yecheskel Man Amra Elagamar Gamir LeAsi Yecheskel Asmacha Akra. But rather, what the Rambam believes is that this is a Torah law of Zona, and that Yecheskel simply fleshed it out in a biblical text, years and years, centuries after the Chumash was sealed shut. So we find this every now and then. When you find a halacha that appears in the Nevi'im, we say, well, it's not an invention of the Nevi'im. The halacha was always around since Torah times. It's just that it was Gemara Gemiri. It was oral tradition that now has representation in the later books of the Bible. Okay. But let's go to the Rashba. So the Rashba is of the view that Zerah Beis Yisrael is the main issue. So take a look in the Rashba. Tamihani Lituva. He's very troubled by the idea that relations at the age of less than three should be a factor, because we disregard such relations in all circumstances. It's not considered znus. So why should the age of three be a cutoff? Rather, the machlokus is over a Torah law. So the Rashba says explicitly what we inferred from Rashi and Tosfos, that if your concern was about Zona, this can only be a din derabanan. If your concern is Zarabes Yisrael, this is a din d'oraisa. Okay, let's skip the Ritva because he basically says the same thing. And now let's go to the Shulchan Aruch. So if you're following in the source sheets, we're on the second page towards the top of the page. The Shulchan Aruch. Ezo hi Zona. Who's considered a Zona? Kol Shein Bas Yisrael, anyone who wasn't born Jewish. Or a Jewish girl who had relations with a forbidden man. And then a Gioris and a Meshuchraris, even if less than 3 years old, have the category of Zona. Okay, so that's enough with the Gemara, the Rishonim, and the Psak and the Shulchan Aruch. This would seem to give us very little wiggle room in the here and now. But why might we want some wiggle room here? The answer is because Kohanim have a lot of rules, you know, governing their behavior, and they need to get married. And especially if all the good Jewish girls at a certain age get married off and they're no longer available, and this Kohen is getting on in years, well, if, when you're in your late 30s or in your 40s or in your 50s, who do you typically marry? A Grusha. But a Kohen can't marry a Grusha because it's Asa Midoraisa. So who's this guy going to marry? Well, look beyond the Jewish world, a Gioris, and he'll find a nice convert. But that's Usher too. Ah, but you might find one anyway, even if it's Usher. So now what do we do? What do we do when the Kohen and the Gioris are in love? And now they come to their rabbi and says, Rabbi, you got to help me. I can't tell you how many times this has happened to me. Actually, I can tell you, 3. All right. But what do we do about it? Let's go to a tshuva, which was written in the 19-teens by the Malamed Lahoil. Who was the Malamed Lahoil? Who was the Malamed Lahoil? Come on. Reb David Hoffman.
Right. Very good.
The man who I wish was my great-grandfather, but wasn't. I'm not related to him, but I wish he was. Okay. So the Malamed Lahoil was the rabbi in Berlin and was the rector of the Berlin Rabbinical Seminary and was the leading posek among German Orthodox Jews between the 1880s and 1920 and 1921 when he died. Okay, so he has the following question. It's a long one, but let's read pretty much the whole thing because it's worthwhile. Kohen shenasa nachri b'tzivoleha. So a Kohen married a shiksa in a civil marriage. And remember, in Germany, there were civil marriages in the early decades of the 20th century. The other men of Ben, they had a son, Benimel ben Mames, and they gave the kid a bris, and the kid died. So it's a sad story. And by the way, why did they give the kid a bris? So the answer is, it's a very common thing to give a bris to a half-Jew. Why? Because just in case they want to convert him later, the bris is over and done with. In America today, among those who can married out, and the mother is a shiksa, they'll very often give a bris anyway, just to play it safe in case later we want to make him Jewish. So the ata hanochris liba nokva shenabe daskibna. The mother was crazy. The mother was going crazy that she had a child that died, and that she is not in the same religion as the child. Okay, verotzelis gayer. Now she wants to convert. Lisa's calling that much of Yisrael and married her husband, her Jewish husband, according to Jewish rules. So we're worried if we don't convert this woman and allow her to marry her Kohanic husband, that she's going to go insane. Okay? So, Ech Yasu, what do we do now? There's a real worry for the mental health of this woman if we don't placate her and make her into a Jew. So, Tshuva. Tachila, Yeshlach or Eza Iser Godol Yosir. So the Malamed Lahoil says, we have to find out what's worse. What's a bigger Avera? If a Kohen Osa Gioris, if a Kohen marries a convert, or Nasa Nachris, or marries a Shiksa, what do you think is worse in the long term for a Kohen to remain married to a so-called Zona Gioris for the next 50 years, or for him to be married to a Shiksa for 50 years?
Marrying a Shiksa is worse.
Okay, so Malamed Lahoil is going to conclude that marrying the non-Jew is worse. We'll actually see Rav Moshe disagrees in the Igros, which will be very fascinating. But for the time being, the Malamed Lahoil thinks, well, let's ask a question and let's find the answer. So nearly pashut the yoser yesh iser benachris. It's worse to marry a non-Jew. The ainli laharach bazeh. I don't want to spend too much time on this. First of all, the issue is all of his kids will be Gentiles. If we don't convert the woman, if he's married to a non-Jew for his whole life, any kids he has isn't Jewish. That marrying a non-Jew is forbidden under Torah law, and there's a chi of kares, as opposed to if you marry a gioris, it's no worse than just violating a simple law. So it would seem, at first blush, that it's to save a Jew from violating extremely bad prohibition, it's best to convert this woman to Judaism. So now the question is, well, but is there a downside to converting this woman to Judaism? What's the downside?
That's me.
Huh?
Look at that.
What's the downside to converting the woman? Who knows?
You know Asher?
Yeah, of course.
Okay, so Gemara says the Tshuva says Omnam yesh lepak b'kalzeh alaminachet b'shvil hizakeh chavercha. So the problem is that we have a concept in the Gemara that we don't tell a person to sin in order that fellows should gain. So who's sinning and who's gaining? Well, in two different ways. One is the Jew is sinning by marrying a woman forbidden to him. And who's gaining? The woman is gaining her mental health, whatever it is. But more importantly, the rabbis are sinning by either converting this woman, who we know she's going to violate an iser in terms of matrimonial law, or the rabbis are sinning by officiating at a wedding, which is an illicit wedding. So in two different ways, potentially, the rabbis, the Beis Din, the gatekeepers of Judaism, are doing something wrong against the rules in order to facilitate some improvement for somebody else. And that would seem to go against Talmudic jurisprudence. Okay? On Rabbi Bechoros, So one of the problems with converting her is, if someone comes to convert to Judaism, and they accept 99% of Judaism, but they overtly reject an aspect of halacha, you're not allowed to convert them. And this woman seems to be rejecting the din of Zona not marrying a Kohen. So she's accepting 99% of Judaism, but that's not good enough. And for the rabbis to go ahead with it, the rabbis are doing wrong. So it's a big problem. How do we make peace with putting through a woman through a conversion process that seems to be a treif process? So the Malam Lahoel says, if she were to explicitly say, I reject the din of Zona Gioris marrying a Kohen, then we could not convert her. However, if she doesn't say so explicitly, even if we know that's what she's probably going to do, we can close our eyes and play Nisht Vissendig. All right? We don't know any better. And we'll just allow it to happen. The gam yesh lo madavka mekabel nager mishum takana di day. So we have lomar ot mekabel kol torah shai kol now. Okay, fine. Let's skip a little bit. All right. Now we prat v'nidu din dan yesh lacho shim shitishkag. Where she's going to go crazy?
Isn't that similar to many conversions today, where rabbis know that conversions they've done with the rabbis know that this person's converting. But they convert them because at that moment in time, maybe. But they know, like 99%, they're not going to keep anything. So I'm not sure why that's not in this case. I mean, or okay, maybe so that's the whole basis.
We allow conversion for the sake of marriage. Conversion for the sake of marriage is asr lachatchila, but mutter b'di'evid, and we live in a very b'di'evid world. But that's just motivation was not ideal. But even where the motivation is not ideal, maybe the person will fully accept the obligations, the burdens of Judaism. Where we know they're rejecting certain burdens of Judaism, we're not supposed to accept them. So in this case, it seems like we know full well that she's rejecting an element of the halacha. But let's keep going. So Malam Lahoel says, in this case, there's an issue of Chil Hashem. What's the issue of Chil Hashem? That the goyim will say that the Jews are not merachamim al hanochrit. The Jews have no mercy. Here it's Germany, 1905. It's a Shiksa married to a Jew, and there were a lot of them in Germany around that time, intermarriages, you know, Mischling being produced. And the Gentiles are really anti-Semitic. The ones who aren't marrying Jews, the ones who are marrying Jews presumably are not so anti-Semitic. And if the Goyim were to find out that a woman is facing a mental health crisis and it could have been resolved by the rabbis doing something nice for her, and the rabbis won't do something nice for her, well, then woe is us, because they'll start breaking out the guns and the Zyklon B, and they'll kill all the Jews. So it's a real problem. Anti-Shemiut. We have to worry about that. We can't be seen as being nasty to them. Otherwise, they'll be really nasty to us. Okay. So, in the end, what does the Melamed say? He says that you can convert the woman, but don't marry them. Don't officiate at the marriage. Let them just be together, but don't do chuppah v'kiddushin. So it's a Jew and a Jew whose marriage together really is illicit, but we facilitated them both being in the same religion, and now he's not married to a shiksa, he's just not the chuppah v'kiddushin. And any children that they have would be chalalim, because they would have, you know, they would be sired by an illegitimate union. So this was Rabbi David Zvi Hoffman's halfway answer. Let's make them happy. We'll make her Jewish. It isn't ideal. Don't officiate at a wedding, but well, problem solved, basically. That's what he's arguing.
Can I interrupt for a second?
But I
want to ask
if
you
if they do a non
Bruce, let me finish.
Would that
Bruce, will you let me finish? Thank you.
Yeah, okay.
I want to ask you about the situation that occurred with Ezra returning to Eretz Yisrael after the Korban and the decree by Cyrus. And he discovered a lot of Jews had intermarried, including Prince as well. And then we have the story of Nehemiah that came as well. And he thought that he would have a different approach, where Ezra said, all the men need to divorce their women.
Yeah.
And then Nehemiah said, let's not try to divide the families. Let's just hope that the male Jewish husband would not allow his children to intermarry. And that didn't work either. What was the Anshei Knesset Gedolah doing with respect to those situations where the children were they converted? What was the status of those children of the time of Ezra and Nehemiah?
So this is a very good question, a very important question. It leads to two other questions. One, how old is the matrilineal concept that we accept today? Has it been around since the time of Moses and Mount Sinai? Was it invented later? Was it known at the time of Ezra? It's a big question about that. And secondly, when was conversion invented? Has conversion been around since the days of Moshe Rabbeinu, or was individual conversion to Judaism a later invention? The scholars will say that matrilineal and conversion are very late concepts from late Second Temple times. That prior to that, a goy could not become a Jew. Period. End of story. That you could that intermarriage happened, and that intermarriage wasn't necessarily precluded except for the seven Canaanite nations. And you had people. You know, Ruth was a Moaviyah. She was not a Jew, but she could marry because Moaviv lo Moavit. And as for her kids, well, they grew up in a Jewish environment, so therefore they're Jewish. So that's a conventional academic viewpoint. The plain reading of the text of the Tanakh is that those who were told to get out had to leave. Goodbye. You know, and they're gone. And why? Mm-hmm. Because Ezra had a very, very tough position on matters of intermarriage. Wanted genealogical purity. And he got it.
I'll help you. Thank you.
Yeah, Bruce, you had a question.
Yeah, the question was, if they do a marriage, it's not a halakhic marriage, but it suffices for the woman to feel that she's married, like they don't have kosher aid. They do something that's not a halakhic marriage, but it's enough. It's not, the only rabbis know that she's not married, but she's married. Or maybe that's good enough.
It was good enough in that case to say.
a way to fix the issue. I feel they're living in sin.
All right, so let's go to the next case. The next case was Tshuva that was written in the 1920s by Rabbi Yehuda Leib Tzirelson. Rabbi Yehuda Leib Tzirelson was the chief rabbi of Bessarabia and was the biggest posik in Romania and was a member of the Romanian parliament. He was basically the leader of Romanian Jewry. He died in 1941 when the Germans invaded. So he had a tshuva about a girl who was 17 years old and converted to Judaism when she was 15. And she lived for 2 years as a Jew, as a good Jew. And her parents approved of the conversion. And she was an only child. This was a very bizarre scenario. Who ever heard of in Romania, a Goyish teenage girl converting to Judaism, not for marriage, just because she loved the religion and her family approved of it. And then at 17, they engaged her to some bacher, and it turned out that bacher was a Kohen. And the wedding had already been prepared, and obviously the boy and the girl liked each other because they really were in love. They wanted to, you know, to get married. And all of a sudden, because they found out the boy was a Kohen, or they discovered that it's usher for a Kohen to marry Gioris, the local rabbi asked Rabbi Yehuda Leib Tzirelson, well, what do we do now? He forbade the wedding, or he forced them to at least postpone the wedding, awaiting a psak from a big gadol. So
why don't they do the halakhic trick these days, in that the guy is not really a Kohen because there's
okay.
There's
so no we're gonna get to that. That's gonna be one of the options.
And let him give up. Oh, no.
So we're gonna get to that soon. So the local rabbi, in explaining to Yehuda Leib Tzirelson why he needs an answer and is hoping for a lenient answer, is because the Jews are complaining that I'm too machmir, meaning the local Jews, and the goyim are complaining that I unfairly called her a zona, when in fact she's a virtuous girl, not a promiscuous girl. After all, at 15, she converted to Judaism, so likely she wasn't fooling around, you know, behind the high school bleachers with some guy or five guys. You know, she was a good girl, and now the Jews are calling her a prostitute? Shame on them. And this is Romania, where if the Jews call a shiksa girl a prostitute, you could expect a pogrom. Okay? So, moreover, the boy is saying that if he has to, he'll take baptism in order to marry his bride. So the boy loves the girl a lot. He or she converted to Judaism, but he can't marry her because of some halakhic technicality, and he's throwing it in the face of the rabbis. If you don't let me marry this girl in Judaism, I'll become a meshumid. Okay? So, what's the answer? Well, so Rabbi Yehuda Leib Tzirelson says that, you know, you're allowed to, in order to facilitate a positive outcome. And even though the Gemara says that we don't do that, it's not a categorical rule. It's not a categorical rule. So what's the most famous example of sinning in order to facilitate a mitzvah, and the Gemara says it's okay? I think we mentioned it once before. So Rabbi Eliezer had 9 guys for a minyan. And what did he do?
Converted his guy's slave.
He freed his slave. And so Evan Meshuchar is a ger and now kosher for the minyan. So the Gemara says in one place, mitzvah shiny. For the sake of a mitzvah, it's different. You're allowed to. In another place, the Gemara says, mitzvah du rabim shiny. For the sake of a mitzvah of the public, the general public, it's allowed. There's another story about a slave girl who was being used for nefarious sexual purposes by all sorts of guys. And the question is, should we force the owner to emancipate her? And the Gemara seems to conclude, yes, you should, because this way she'll marry a man, a Jewish man, who will then rein her in and be her only, you know, sexual outlet, and everybody else will no longer be engaging in znus. So the general public benefits from now her no longer being sexually available to them. So we see then that it's not a categorical rule of don't sin so that others will do a mitzvah. Rather, there's a sliding scale. And sometimes we'll allow a misdeed in order to avoid a worse misdeed. So in this case, we're saving two Jewish lives in the spiritual sense, that if they're going to become Meshumadim, if we don't allow this to happen, well, that's a total disaster. What's worse than someone becoming Meshumad? Moreover, Yehuda Leib Tzirilson says, a Gioras being a Zona is only a Din D'Rabbanan. Now, we know that's a Machlokas a Rishonim. We spent the first 10 minutes today discussing how there's a Machlokas Rishonim on that. And he says the Rashba, the Tosfos, the Rav HaMagid all say it's D'Rabbanan. And even if we hold like the Ravid, who says that the issue is not Zona, but rather Zera Beit Yisrael, that source is in Yecheskel, and Divrei Kabbalah is like a D'Rabbanan, not a D'Oraisa. So, however you want to slice it, we're talking about going against the D'Rabbanan only, and saving Jews from a constant violation of an Aseh and Lotaseh will trump a one-time violation of the D'Rabbanan Din of Zona. Plus, the Gentiles are looking for any pretext to kill us, and so we have to make sure we don't give them such a pretext. So then the question is, well, the Melamed Lahoil, he didn't allow a chuppah. He allowed a conversion. In this case, there already was a conversion. So are we going to allow a chuppah? So Rav Tzirilson says, you can make the chuppah, but announce that it's a one-time horas shah. It's an emergency ruling. You should not extrapolate from this for other scenarios. And the guy can't duchen anymore or get rishon. And the kids are chalolim. So that's from the 1920s, from Bessarabia, from Romania, and citing the Din D'Rabbanan and the notion of the sliding scale, that for a big mitzvah, we can violate a little mitzvah, and citing the sugya from Elezer and the Mincha Minyan. Okay, so those are some of the proof texts that he has. Now let's go to, if you have your source sheet, okay. So let's take a look at the Igros Moshe. So the Igros Moshe was, this particular tshuva was written in 1962.
Rabbi? Yeah. Rabbi, isn't the guy very happy with the fact that the girl does not become a Jew and marry a Jew? When you said earlier that the goyim will get upset because we didn't convert her, it's probably against the law for her to become a Jew, and they'd be very happy if she didn't become a Jew and that the Jews themselves blocked this marriage. And this girl's got to go back home to her family and marry a regular Shegetz and be done with it. And I'm sure they'd be less happy to think that
so let me respond to that.
Jewish law, the first to work.
Okay, so in the Germany case, where the woman wasn't yet Jewish and the issue was converting her, so conversion to Judaism in Germany was legal at that time. It was not illegal, and the concern, it was a society that was becoming more secular. And the concern was more of offending people, not the religious angle. In the case of Romania, I'm assuming it was legal to convert to Judaism at that point, because otherwise, how did the girl do it previously? But having converted, the issue wasn't that the goyim wanted her to marry a Jew. The issue was that the Jews were offending goyish sensibilities by accusing one of their own of being a harlot. So it's the underlying premise of the rule that is offensive to the Gentile world. Not that they really care that this couple gets married. Probably they don't like Jews anyway. They wouldn't want her to get married. But the idea that the Jews accused her of being a Zona was offensive. Okay, so let's look at the Igros Moshe.
And we couldn't use the excuse that a Zona is an innkeeper?
No, the Rachav like excuse wasn't going to work that time. No, no. Okay, so let's look at the Igros. So you had a civil marriage between a Kohen and a Gentile woman. Okay. So the Jew is saying, you have to let me marry her or else I'm going to become a Meshumad. Again, the Kohen is threatening to run away from Judaism and become a Goy. So what do we do? 1962, this question was being asked by Eliezer Levin from Detroit. So he named a davar echad mishpacha chashuva shenasa nachris. So it's from a prominent Jewish family, and he married a shiksa. The yesh lekvar bani mena, and they have children already together. It's a family now. So after years of being married to a non-Jewish woman and having children with her, all of a sudden the Jewish boy comes back to his family and says, Mommy, Daddy, Rabbi, I'm back and I want to convert my family and I want to rejoin the religion. Okay? But if you don't accept me back, I'm actually going to go to take a baptism. Meaning we were secular for a while and I married out and I had kids, but I didn't become a goy. But if you don't help me back in, I will become a goy. So, So Rav Moshe says, right off the bat, I don't see any way to permit this. I do not see any way to permit this. Okay, so if we convert her, but she doesn't accept the notion of the Zona Gioris law, then it's not a good conversion because she's not accepting all the mitzvahs. Okay, and moreover, very important point. Everybody listen. Even if there wasn't a rule about 99% conversion being 0% conversion, that it has to be 100% or nothing, even if we didn't have that rule, still, the husband is not religious, and he's not keeping the din of Zona Gioris. So the woman who's entering the religion from the outside is looking at her husband, the native-born Jew boy, and says, well, if he's not serious about the religion, why should I be serious about the religion? So not only is she going to violate the Zona Gioris law, she's also going to eat chazer and not go to the mikveh and play golf on Shabbos. You know, she'll do everything wrong. This is a very important thing in contemporary Judaism. As a practicing rabbi in America, I can tell you that of the 20-some-odd conversions that I've done, what's poisoned about half of them? The fact that the Jewish man wasn't from enough, and the girl who might have had intentions to keep the religion didn't fulfill her end of the bargain because the guy basically was an obstacle to it. Okay, now, so Rav Moshe says, I think this is forbidden, but I'm told the Malamed Lahoil permitted it, because he thought that a Kohen marrying a Zona is not as bad as a Kohen marrying a non-Jew. And Rav Moshe says, lo muvan li, I don't think he's right, doesn't make sense to me. Adarabah, no, the opposite. If you convert her and she doesn't keep the mitzvahs, she'll violate neither all the time, which is a chiyuv kares, as opposed to if she remains a shiksa, is a Gentile woman ever a nida? No. So Rav Moshe says it's worse to be married to an irreligious Jewish woman, especially the Zona Gioris Cohen situation, than it is for a Jew to be married to a Gentile. That is a chidush, okay? A lot of people would not have agreed with that, and a lot of people would think that's counterintuitive, but that's what Rav Moshe held. So therefore he said, we're not helping these people. We're not converting anybody. Okay. Then another Rav Moshe, from later in the Igrist, so he may bedaver echad shenase bal tshuva achrei shekvarnase nachrasai ashpas kavrei chabad. All right, so a Jew was married to a shiksa, and the chabadsker has got a hold of him, and now he wants to be frum again. Okay, and bear in mind this happened when Rav Moshe was still alive. Obviously, he wrote a story about this. So this was in the 1970s, maybe. So chabad was early on getting into get people to be frum. Okay, mishpacha sabam izlat tapata. So they came from a certain town in Russia in 1923, and the grandfather came and didn't know any Torah. And the father knew no Torah. But the father told the son, who married the shiksa, that my father told me that we're Kohanim. So can we allow for the conversion of this woman who's married to someone who might be a Kohen? And Rav Moshe comes to the conclusion that what? Because the grandfather of this boy was already irreligious in 1923, and the communists took over in 1917, and the boy never heard his grandfather say we're Kohanim because the grandfather was dead already when this kid was born. It's only him relying upon his father who heard his father say we were Kohanim, but nobody was religious. Then Mistama, what happened? They weren't really Kohanim. So Rav Moshe gives a leniency. I was a little surprised when I first read this, that because of the shaky knowledge of the kahuna status, we can be lenient in this case and allow the conversion, and allow them to get to be married religiously. Okay, so
it's like a spake spakers,
right? So what's the origin of Kohanim not really being Kohanim Bismanenu? So if you look in the source sheet, I have the Rivash, the Yamshel Shlomo, and the Megad Avram. The Rivash from the 14th century, the Yamshel Shlomo from the 16th century, the Megad Avram from the 17th century, all saying that nowadays we don't really know who's a Kohen, and that we just give a guy Rishon, we let him Duchen, but we're not 100% sure. So because there's an element of Suffolk in the absence of a Ksav Yichus, of a genealogical tree, so it's a tzad lahakil sometimes. Sometimes, but not all times. So now let's go to 1967, Rabbi Isaac Klein wrote a tshuva. Who was Rabbi Isaac Klein? Anybody know? What kind of rabbi? Take a wild guess.
Progressive, conservative, reform.
He was a conservative rabbi. So Isaac Klein was the frumest conservative rabbi in America. For those who know their American Jewish history, they'll know that the conservative rabbinate in the mid-20th century had traditional people, had centrist people, and had basically guys who were chaserfressers and were closet atheists. Okay, so the conservative rabbinate ran the gamut. The frumest conservative rabbi in America was Isaac Klein. He was also one of the leading figures in their halachic committee, the Committee on Jewish Law and Standards. And he wrote a tshuva in 1967 permitting a Kohen to marry a Gioris on a variety of reasons. So one of the angles was, we don't really know who's a Kohen anymore. Another angle was, well, there's the issue of we don't want them to intermarry. Because if we don't allow this, they might marry outright a Gentile. There were a variety of considerations that led to be lenient in this case. And he cited the Mlam Lahoil, he cited Yehuda Leib Tzirlson, and he gave his psak. Later on, this psak was reinforced by other conservative rabbis, and one of their arguments was, is the woman really a zona? After all, Jewish girls nowadays have the same relaxed sexual mores as do the Gentiles. And it's a chutzpah for us and dishonest for us to claim that American Jewry has more chaste standards than society at large, because we know that it isn't true. What do you think about that? Your reaction? No? Okay.
I think there's validity to that.
I think so too. Whether we want to extrapolate change is another story.
No, but
okay, so that's one factor. I can't hear you.
Have a category. I don't think we have. It used to be that we say so what. That it's a category that was established then, and that's the category that's forever. Same thing with the Zona. I mean, the logic is good, but it was the category set up. And it doesn't matter how if the mores change over time.
Okay, so that's a fair point. Now, comparing
it to the Travis oil. I don't know if it's a good comparison.
All right, so one of the arguments in favor of leniency was that the idea of the zona is only an interpretation, meaning if it was an issue of lakor davar min haTorah, to uproot a Torah law, so that requires a real crisis like of cataclysmic proportions to uproot a Torah law, lakor davar min haTorah. But since this is not min haTorah, it's only a perush on the Torah, which arguably is a din derabbanan. Well, extenuating circumstance. Let's go for leniency. Now, interestingly, the Union for Traditional Judaism, which is a right-wing breakaway from conservative Judaism and led by Rabbi David Novak and David Weiss Halivni. So Novak wrote a tshuva in which he rejects this idea, the conservative rabbis, that a Zona Gioris can marry a Kohen. He says, no, we can't overturn long-standing Jewish tradition. That even if there's a compelling argument, and even if there's a Chil Hashem factor, well, too bad. We're not overturning anything. One last point before we stop is that if you're willing to overturn the rule, are you willing to officiate at the wedding? And if you're willing to officiate at the wedding, should it be a subdued wedding, or can you have 500 people at the Marina del Rey or Astoria? And so there's another tshuva written by a conservative rabbi in Israel, Jeremy Gordon. I don't know if you guys know who he is, but he's in Israel. He's an Israeli conservative rabbi. And in which he says, once you're going to allow it, you have to allow a full-fledged wedding. You can't tell people that, well, let's do it in secret when no one's looking. That, you know, Kala Narva Chasuda, even if she's ugly, that we allow people to be open and to celebrate, and we're not going to dumb down the affair. Okay, so that's my spiel for today. This is an ongoing problem that emerges every so often between a Kohen and a Gioris, and rabbis have to deal with it. The progressive rabbis have their answer, and the traditional rabbis have their answer.
Is there anything to the...
So how many cases like this have you officiated?
I've never officiated a Kohen marrying a Gioris, but I've had two scenarios of a Kohen with a non-Jewish girlfriend where this could have developed and reached the finish line, but in one case, I convinced a Kohen to dump the Shiksa girlfriend, and in the other case, to a conservative rabbi.
What about the way, what about the halacha that the Kedushin is chal? If the Kohen marries a Gerusha, don't we have the concept or the law that the Kedushin, at least those...
Yes. Yes, so if a Kohen marries a Grusha, and for that matter, if a Kohen marries a Zona, the Kiddush Nischal, and they have to have a Gerushin in order to be a part. It's definitely true. Now, does that make it better or worse? So arguably, it makes it better because at least it's
kosher.
It's a matrimonial union. It's valid. It counts.
Correct.
Arguably, it makes it worse because every day you're in further violation of being in an illicit marriage.
But if you have good, so what's the benefit? Is there a benefit? Why is the halacha that the kedushin is chal, which they're
okay? So the malamad lehoil.
Really
listen,
positive.
The malamad lehoil suggested converting the girl in that case, but not officiating at the wedding, knowing that they're going to be together. And his theory was, well, if you look in the Yavitz of Yaakov Emden, he allows a person to have a pilegish, and pilegish is without full fledged matrimony. So since you're not violating the Isser of Kicha of taking her in marriage, but Lamaisa, you get to have a relationship with her, that's the best of all worlds. Okay. But Rav Yaakov Emden's theory about Pilegish has never caught on, other than in Brooklyn. There's a certain subset of Brooklyn Jewry where they allow it.
Why can't...
Really?
What about the... What about that every Kohen is really a Suffolk Kohen, and he just has to say, you know what, I'm not really sure.
Okay,
and
good.
The rabbi can remove the kumna from him.
So even the conservative rabbis who are looking to be lenient were reluctant to fall back on that, because the reality is that this guy has a brother, and that brother duchens, gets rishon, does pirin aben. And the family, they're all functioning Kohanim. And all of a sudden, one of them says, because he wants to marry a Zoyna, well, I'm not sure if Zaidi was really a Kohen, so I'm going to do whatever I want. That it's incongruous that Shnei Achim, one brother does this and one brother does that. It doesn't feel... So we can't just say, well, I don't want to take...
But what if in the real from family, one brother really finds out that, you know, it's really a doubt? They're all from, and it really is a doubt. What happens to the family?
So if there's a real doubt, like in other words, you find out some piece of information about the family tree that leads you to conclude we're not really Kohanim, then lechumrah he shouldn't take Rishon, he shouldn't duchen, he shouldn't do pirin aben, he should not declare himself a Kohen. But also lechumrah, arguably, he shouldn't marry a Zon or a Grusha.
Okay.
We're very frum. We're very machmirim. Okay. All right, guys. On that note, a good Shabbos to one and all. See you next time.
Thank you. Thank you, Rabbi. Yeah.